It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. And no, Microsoft employees, you may not work from home forever. The cloud's down yet again. What does this mean for Microsoft Azure? And Paul Thurrott talks about the story, how Microsoft has figured out how to get xCloud on iOS. Very tricky. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. Securing every access point in your company doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure, even when they're working remotely. Check out LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 694. Recorded Wednesday, October 14th, 2020. COVID washing. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Worldwide Technology. Worldwide Technology's Advanced Technology Center is like no other testing and research lab in the world. With more than $500 million of equipment, including big OEMs like NetApp. And it's virtual, so you can access it 24/7. To learn more and get insights into all the ATC has to offer, go to wwt.com/twit. And by Melissa. Like expired milk, 30% of your customers' data goes bad every year. That's money down the drain. Visit Melissa's developer portal for free access to data quality APIs, demos, and code samples. Freshen up your sour data today with 1,000 records clean free at melissa.com/twit. And by Twilio. Strengthen your customer relationships by uniting communications across your entire business. Get everything you need to build and deliver a new customer experience with Twilio. Go to Twilio.com to learn more. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Microsoft. Here for your listening enjoyment, Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com, a ZDNet blog, a ZDNet joint.
Yes.
Yes. Also.
A Red Ventures.
A Red ZDNet Ventures, yes. Yes. Is the color going to change on the website? ZDNet was always red, wasn't it?
There was a red ball. That was CNET, yeah. CNET Media Group, right? Yeah. Yep.
So that's easy.
I don't know.
That's easy then.
I don't know. I'd like to pick the color. Bittersweet Shimmer is my choice, but, you know, not everybody would make that their choice.
And that right. Laughter, that dismissive laughter comes from Mr. Paul Thurrott. Thurrott.com, the name of his blog, thurrogood.com. And then, of course, his books are at leanpub.com. And today...
Bittersweet Shimmer.
Bittersweet Shimmer. Where?
Yes.
That was a Microsoft.
It's the color you see when you're having a stroke. It was a... it was from some kind of a... Something to do with Windows
Nokia
Foundation.
Thing. Or
Nokia,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a Nokia thing.
Hey, I think it was a code name for release. Release.
You didn't cover it last week, so I think it's probably nothing. But I did see a rumor that Microsoft might be in the market to buy Nokia again.
Okay, so do you know that came to fruition today? And what it ended up being was Nokia is going to host all their IT infrastructure in the Google Cloud.
Oh, well, that's not good.
No, so what I wonder is if Microsoft was in the bidding for hosting it all in Azure because of that rumor, you know.
Oh.
Man, they loved it so much they bought it twice.
Exactly. Everybody was like, are they going to buy it again? I'm like, wait a minute. Nokia's not even the same company.
Well, that's why they could buy it again.
I guess they could buy a telco company, which is what they kind of are now,
right?
Yeah.
They don't even make their own phones now. They just make boards and switches.
They license the name like Polaroid does.
But yeah, I think that's what happened. That's my guess. I guess all the cloud vendors were in the bidding.
Yeah.
I know. I saw it. I was like,
no credence at all. So first it was Twitter. You can all work from home forever. Then it was Dropbox just did it yesterday. You can all work from home forever. Don't ever come back.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Is it Microsoft's turn?
No.
Oh.
What's the story, Mary Glory?
No. Oh, throw some cold water on this one too, Mary Jo.
I know, right? There are people saying that Microsoft said that, but actually what they said was the new norm is most employees can work from home less than 50% of the time. So it's a hybrid thing, right? It's not everybody can work from home. Some people, if you can negotiate it with your manager, might be able to get that deal of working home from home forever. But think about it. Microsoft's building this multi-million dollar campus in a huge makeover in Redmond. They're still hiring people all over the world. They're not going to suddenly just say, you know what? Nobody has to come back into the office anymore. We're done.
Could save a lot of money in real estate.
They could. I mean, they have a big office in the middle of Manhattan in Times Square where I don't think anybody is back. But
right.
I think they're going to just kind of hold on and assume that once there's a vaccine or once there's some way that it's safe to come back, people are going to come back to the office. That's my guess.
Well, there goes my plans of working at Microsoft, because I can tell you one place I'm not going is an office.
Yep. So, you know, there are people at Microsoft who don't work in an office. They work on the road. They, especially the salespeople, you know, they're almost never in the office. They're at customer sites or wherever. But there are roles at Microsoft where they have to go into the office. Like throughout the pandemic, people who work in the Azure data centers have had to come in, right? Because there are physical things you need to do to keep the data center running. Not everybody has to come in from Azure, but there are people who have been coming in throughout the pandemic at Microsoft, and I'm sure every cloud vendor, right? Because those racks of servers don't just service themselves, Paul.
Not yet.
Not yet.
But if AI, if AI works out the way they say it's going to.
Maybe one day, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Microsoft put out this thing called the hybrid, what did they call it? The hybrid workplace flexibility guide for their employees, and then there are a whole set of rules,
that's so corporate.
About when to work at home, SP1, when you can. Yeah, exactly. No, so for people to just say Microsoft is letting everyone work at home, not in the least. That is not what is happening here at all.
Yeah.
No. Well, and I don't know if you guys saw this today, but there was a big story in the New York Times today about Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Apple buying up tons of real estate in Manhattan right now. And they're going to have offices here, right? Like they're going to expand their footprint hugely in New York City. So I think most of these big companies, not everybody, but most are thinking there is going to be a day when people come back into the office.
Yeah. So you can invest now when the going's good for that kind of thing.
Rents in San Francisco are down 31%.
Now they're only 45% over the national average.
Yeah.
They're down 15% Manhattan. And the most apartment vacancies in like 15 years or 20 years or something like that in New York City right now.
With everyone working from home, I'm hoping in the next couple of years to move out of here and to sell it to some New Yorker who doesn't have to go to New York all that much. And, hopefully.
That is the suburban hope now, by the way. You're being facetious. Maybe not.
No, I'm not.
I want to get an apartment in New York, and you guys can live here now. That's good.
Yeah, it's about 2 hours to New York. So if you have to go occasionally.
Yeah, perfect.
And you enjoy the sight of corn.
Perfect.
This is a place.
We're only 45 minutes from San Francisco. Up in the wine country. Wouldn't it be nice?
Hey, you're like a bedroom community now.
Yeah, we always have been, actually.
Yeah.
And you could live here, and I could live in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds good.
Now's the time, Leo. There's a lot of deals to be had.
That's what they say. Buy low, sell high.
The vultures are circling. You got to join the birds.
I'll tell you, though, in the past maybe 2 weeks, I live across from a giant apartment complex and I can look out my window and see it. And there have been so many moving trucks. So I'm like, okay, people are starting to come back and
moving in or moving out?
In. Right.
What are they? Because are they moving in?
It was empty over the summer.
That's interesting. Like,
there were so many empty apartments across, and now I can see people are moving in. So I'm like, yeah, people are coming back.
But I think their timing might not be the best.
I know.
I hate to say
we're about to have the winter, right?
I'd say, wait a minute, just a little
bit. Let's see how the winter goes.
just to wait a minute or two.
Yeah, see what I would too. I would wait if I wasn't here already.
Well, you're already, you're just hunkered down. You know how to handle it.
I have to just stay here.
Yeah. You're like that person in the dystopian end of the world novel who just never left.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
They're the ones the movie's about. So
that's right.
You know, it makes sense.
That's right.
The guy who's moving around a lot doesn't make it.
No. That's right. You saw that. Well, you read The Stand. We know.
Sure. I am a legend, you know.
Okay, so
yeah,
don't get your hopes up, kids. Less than 50%, even for those who can work at home, is not a really great concession.
No,
you know, it's like everything else.
I know it's variable, right? Like if your manager says, "Hey, you can do what you're doing from home," and there's no rush to come back,
yeah,
right.
I also think it's going to evolve over time. You know,
me too.
Like for example. It's sitting here, what is it, October? It's October, right? Yeah. So, you know, looking at next year, we already know that Microsoft isn't having any shows through the middle of next year. But, I mean, do we really expect them to have any next year? I mean, unless it's a miracle.
Yeah, I know. I don't know if you saw this. Donna Sarkar is moving to the to Barbados for 3 months. Did you see this? She really is. Yeah. Because she's like, there's no reason we have to stay in Seattle because we can do our work virtually. And so we're going to Barbados for like 3 months.
So that's fascinating to me. And also I'm envious because Barbados is one of, I think, six countries that actually have long-term work visa possibilities for
that's
United States citizens.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's why she's
and
doing it.
That's something I would do if it weren't for the fact that the timing is wrong because I've got kids in college and they'll be back over the holidays. And then we have animals, like idiots. We have like a huge dog. Right. It's the size of a Shetland pony. And then, you know, two cats. And it's like, we can't really, we're finally able to be mobile and the whole world has aligned against, you know, us doing this, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's good. Yeah. It's something I would do if I could. Sure.
I know. Like if you don't have to be in an office and, you know, the next few months for Microsoft are usually quietish, right? Once Ignite happens, it's like everybody's doing their thing, but they're all doing it virtually. And, you know, holidays are really dead around Microsoft usually. So, yeah, it's a perfect time to leave and just do your job virtually if you can. Get a good internet connection somewhere.
It's not terrible to be in a sunny, beachy place.
After hurricane season, though.
Is over.
Yeah, but this is the end of it, isn't it? Isn't October kind of the end?
Yeah, one more month.
In theory, right? Yeah.
They have so many bad. They actually, Barbados is actively encouraging people to do this. They have a new visa for work from home.
Aruba is, and I don't know if you remember, it was Croatia or Slovakia, one of those countries.
That's actually really smart.
Yeah.
Croatia's beautiful. Croatia's gorgeous.
I know. Every picture I've seen of it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of those countries in Eastern Europe. I could be wrong about that one. I can't remember which one it was. But anyway, there's a list of them. Yeah. Most of them are in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Barbados has the welcome stamp. Hey, welcome. A visa that allows people to work for their employer back home while living and spending in Barbados for a year.
Like up to 2 years. Some countries it's 2 years. And then, of course, you could just always just go to Puerto Rico. It's, you know, it's part of the United States.
There's no income tax in Puerto Rico or something.
Yeah, there's some definite benefits there.
If it weren't for the hurricanes.
Yeah, I know. But, well, like New York, I bet the real estate's relatively cheap right now, unfortunately, because of whatever that hurricane was 2-3 years ago.
Wow. Oh, man. Yeah. Barbados.
Well, I think about this every day. every day.
I know. Barbados is awesome. I've been there. It's beautiful and amazing. It's a great place. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Man. Thanks for really.
I really wrecked your day now, right?
You sidetracked this show.
Well, look, you live in a place that's not going to have a winter like we're probably going to have.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, this is even more appealing to us because the next, you know, several months are not going to be great.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Unless you love the winter like me and you're one of those weird people.
Well, except for, you know, the problem's going to be all these restaurants that want to stay open and whether or not you can even go inside.
Yeah, that's what I'm really worried about. Everybody solved the problem because you are you outside or our gym, everybody's outside, but it's going to start raining and it's going to be cold. Then what? They're thinking about building a tent, which will be indistinguishable from inside, as far as I can tell.
Time during the pandemic, we went to a place called Easton, Pennsylvania, which is right on the New Jersey border. It's the, if you're coming south and west to Pennsylvania. So the first place you drive by. And it's probably on the, I guess it's the Delaware River, probably, I think, is divides the two states. But this place, it looks like, well, it doesn't look like anything like Paris. But I mean, it's like any place in Europe where all of a sudden all the restaurants are all outside. They have the big concrete borders between them and the street. They're in the street. Yep. They've got those fake plants up to, you know, give you some privacy. They've got tents over them and they're starting to put out like heating lamps. And I'm thinking, this is, I've not seen this elsewhere in the area, but this place looks like it's determined that we're going to survive the winter. Like we're just going to make this work.
We're going to stay outside. Yeah.
That's what New York looks like now. Downtown, like down in the East Village. Like that's what it looks like.
I don't know if that's now that's basically you've made it outside inside. I don't know if that's better. But unless you have big fans at the door blowing air through, in which case it doesn't matter.
It's right. So we can worry about the environment when the pandemic's over. But I mean, overall, there are fewer cars, fewer planes, et cetera.
The environment's loving it. They're saying,
I'm sure
this is what we needed all along. Mother Nature's saying, thank you, COVID.
Yes. Sadly, I'm sure it is. Yeah. Yeah. There's one really bad thing that's happened to this planet. Unfortunately, it's us.
Yeah.
Yeah. No kidding.
So, okay. Okay. I don't, you know, it's funny because when we first started working from home, everybody was moaning and groaning like, I can't wait to get back to work. But now what, people are getting used to it. They're realizing they really don't have to do any work when they're home.
Right. Well, okay, hold on. don't sell it the wrong way.
But why all of a sudden it felt like people were dying to get back to work for a while.
I think some people still are, honestly. There are people who just like to be in, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The transition, look, we did this, Mary Jo and I, and you, I guess, too. I mean, we kind of made this transition a long time ago. I feel like there's an honesty to working from home that you don't get in an office because you're always being watched. And it's like you feel the need to pretend you're busy, you know, whereas you can just more honestly kind of go about your day at home. And, you know, stop feeling guilty that you have to do laundry or go on an errand or whatever. It's all
actually
good.
Yeah, that's the advantage of going to work. Is there's a demarcated time that you are working.
That transition. That's right.
And then the rest of the time is yours, whereas where you work from home, there's no, you know, you are working. You're home.
Also, in 25 years ago, I observed this. I picked my wife up from work in Phoenix, and her car was in a shop or something. And we're driving back, and I'm like, what are all these people doing out here driving around? She's like, driving home from work, idiot. That's what people do. You know, and I came up with this kind of almost like a Seinfeldian response, which was like, you know, the nice thing about driving home from work is you're driving home from work, you know, like you get that transition. Yeah. Like when you work from home, you're kind of always at work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you know, though, at work, you waste a lot of time too. Yeah. Like, you know, like just not just water cooler stuff, but more like birthday parties, this, that, right? Like there's a lot of, I mean, it's fun, but it's also like there's a lot of work time at work where you're not working, right?
I think that's really what happened is that people realized that when they go to work, they have to be there 8 hours or 9 hours.
Yeah. Right.
But when you're working from home a couple of hours, you're done. It's like, I didn't really need to be there all that time.
There's
no meetings. There's no cake.
This is going to change so much. And not always for the negative. I think there's going to be a bunch of positives that come out of this.
Yeah,
a lot of people just don't trust people to work from home. But I think as work occurs, you know, you develop that trust and then the system changes.
I think it's worked well for us. I mean, some of us still come in, but it's really just me and a couple of engineers. And then occasionally Lisa or others will come in because they need resources in the office. But it's worked well for us. We, you know, the shows get put out. I think some of the editors come in. It's a little hard to edit from home unless you have a powerful computer and lots of bandwidth. But I think for the most part, a lot of what we do can get done at home.
Yeah.
Either that or my employees actually do nothing. And so I'm not noticing.
Fred, you haven't been in the office in 6 months, and I haven't noticed a single thing.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
What is your role here exactly?
I'm in Barbados right now, but if you need me,
I can't hear you over the seagulls.
Send a seagull. Send a pigeon.
You know what surprised me about everybody working from home in the Microsoft context is a lot of things are still getting done.
They have
to. Like
they have to.
I mean, products are still launching. Hardware, software, like things are still happening, right? Like at first there was a lot of there was a lot of COVID washing, I felt like, at the beginning. Yeah. Like, everything that got delayed, it was, like, because of the pandemic. And I'm like, yeah, is it, though? Or is it just software is always late or whatever, right?
But now I'm like, it's amazing.
I like that term, COVID washing. Did you just make that up? That's good.
No, I think I've read that somewhere.
That's good. Oh, yeah, it's COVID. Yeah, that's it. It's COVID.
Well, yeah, right. Like, it's like when you go in a store and you're like, oh, sorry, this is so slow. You know computers. It's like, yeah, I do know computers. What's wrong?
It's you. Really? That's not it's you.
It's not computers. The computers.
What you get, you can't live with them. You can't live without them.
Yeah. I don't know. I really feel like the companies I cover, you know, Microsoft, hardware makers, software makers, whatever, I think the pace of announcements has actually jumped. I'd love to be able to prove this somehow. Go back and look at like press releases or blog posts from like this month compared to last month, the same company. Like, I just feel like there's more going on, and I almost feel like maybe it's a very human thing, like this desire to prove to the world that you have not been halted by this thing, and you're almost overcompensating either as a company or whatever. I sometimes want to kind of push back and say, guys, enough. Here's an idea. Give me a week off without any stupid announcements from your company. And we'll talk next week. You know, it's like you don't have to come out with something every week.
That's super interesting you feel that way, because for me, covering the business side of Microsoft, I feel like it's been really quiet this year, right? And because I don't cover gaming, like I feel like gaming, the pace has been torrential about the announcements. But if you step back and take all the gaming away, and then there hasn't been as much, I don't think.
Well, I'm not talking about just Microsoft. So I'm talking about PC makers,
hardware
talking
makers, about
companies, Adobe and, Corel/Parallels or whatever. I mean, Adobe emails me every day. It's like, guys.
Do they really?
Nope. Creating this, just to give it, take some time off. It's okay.
Developers are basically working from home, whether they're working at work or working at home. They're solitary beings. They're probably more productive at home. I have to say, though, there's some companies like Google feels like they're really just taking the year off. Don't they?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. I mean, but when I think about Google this time of year, what I'm always reminded of is that sometime in September, Amazon announces about 175 different products.
Yeah.
And then Google comes out a week later and they announce three. And somehow these two companies are competing with each other. But I mean, to me, they've always seemed a little on the, laissez-faire side, but I don't know.
Yeah, Google. I mean, I don't know. They said they just punted IO. They said,
Oh my God. I know that was the weirdest one. And then they're like, we're going to still release some smartphones, but don't worry. No one will want any of them.
Yeah. They basically said, we're not going to compete with, we decided not to compete with flagship phones anymore. You're okay with that, right? Okay.
Yeah. Nobody cares. I mean, nobody even noticed.
Nobody. Yeah. But then somebody was saying yesterday, because Apple had their announcement, that Apple really didn't try too hard to convince you to buy the higher end pro model. They basically, Apple just said, you're going to buy the iPhone 12. You're not going to buy the pro. So we're not going to distinguish between the two.
I actually thought that was one of the things I liked about what they did yesterday.
They weren't pushing.
No, because when you if you go back to last year, the iPhone 11 was a bigger LCD display with bigger bezels, lower quality.
Right.
This year, it's exactly the same display. And that's the end of the sentence. As the Pro, I mean, this thing is same configuration, is about $120 less. I mean, you could get it for even less than that. But I just think that's nice. I don't like these. And it kind of begs the point why you have all these different products. You know, if you're going to make the normal iPhone 11 that nice, just don't have a Pro. Just have a Pro Max or whatever that has the bigger screen.
Right. You know who's working hard is the Verizon marketing department. Those guys are putting in extra hours. They're really.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how we've had 5G for 2 years? Yeah, we're rolling it out this week.
Oh, that. Well, that was.
The real 5G.
The real, yeah, not, that was 5G, but no one. Yeah.
I think they went back to the next playbook, and they were like, how long can we drag this out?
That's basically what's happening
every year.
We're pretending.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not going to be faster because it's. But it you're future proofing.
I mean, are you standing in a shadow? You got to move over a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay.
That's why you need an OLED display so you can see that you're getting 5G speeds in the sun.
It is pretty, pretty amazing. Well, I want to talk about Microsoft 365 and Xbox. I know
doesn't
each of you do as well. So let's take a little teensy break.
Okay.
And we will come back with more from Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. And right now, our show today brought to you by Worldwide Technology. These guys are Silicon Valley in St. Louis. You know, I actually talked them out of saying that on the ad because I said, you don't have to say anything. Just you're the guys. If you use an enterprise technology, it's no-brainer. Worldwide Technology is a place to go. You know, perfect example. No one else has anything like the Advanced Technology Center, the ATC. They've been building this for 10 years. It started in one building. It's in like four or five now. $500 million worth of equipment. Basically, they have all the latest enterprise gear that you would ever want. There's no other testing and research lab like it in the world. They have literally $500 million in equipment from hundreds of OEMs. Key partners ranging from heavyweights like NetApp and Cisco to emerging disruptors like Equinix. And why is it there? Well, originally they thought, well, this our engineers will use this when they're rolling out proofs of concept, they're testing, they're reviewing, they're learning about these products for our customers. But then they had a great insight. They said, you know, thanks to the internet, our customers could use this too. There are on-demand and schedulable labs that you can use any time of the day or night from anywhere in the world. You don't have to go to St. Louis. Things like NetApp Cloud Volumes on Tap or NetApp Storage Grid or NetApp Disaster Recovery as a Service. If you've ever wondered or you're thinking maybe I should have that, this is a way to try it, to test it, to learn about it. Ask the engineers what they think. Hundreds of other labs representing the newest advances in everything from flash storage to multi-cloud to hyper-converged infrastructure to cloud data management. Everything in enterprise right now we need to know. You can learn about products before you launch them. Of course, that's how WWT's engineers use it, which is great because it reduces the amount of time from I think I want to do this to I'm doing it from months to weeks because you can roll it all out. You can test it. And I love what they do. We were out there in March, and I'm looking at the monitors. They have monitors all over the, for everything that's going on. And I'm looking at the fulfillment center. They have fulfillment centers all over the world. I'm looking at them, and I go, what's going on there? And they said, well, every fulfillment center has a full-time on-staff carpenter. I said, what? He's building a custom crate because when we ship gear out, we don't just ship you the pieces and say, you put it together. We put it all together. We test it. We make sure it works. And then so that we can ship it, we build a custom crate designed to hold everything in place to protect it so that when you open the crate, boom, you plug it in. It's good. It's working. It's done. That is dedication. That's the kind of thing WWT does to the last jot and tittle, to the last dot on the I and the cross of the T. They offer these labs as a service, too. So you don't have to go to St. Louis. You can try the dedicated lab space within the ATC to perform your own programmatic testing using anything in that $500 million ecosystem. Any time of the day or night, anywhere in the world. This is where the engineers work every day. It was fun when we visited the ATC. A lot of the engineers are listeners, and they said, Leo, come on, let me show you. I said, you must love this job. They said, oh, my God, this is the greatest. We get to test everything. You'll get the benefit of that. You get besides the labs, you get access to articles, case studies, and all the tools you need to make a difference in today's fast-paced world. To learn more and discover why organizations across every industry, from finance to medical, fast food to groceries to government, use WWT to guide them on their digital transformation. Visit WWT.com/twit. If you create a MyWWT account, you can get all the resources from the ATC available. It's an incredible value, incredible benefit. It's yours. It's yours because WWT wants to share the wealth. WWT.com/twit. Worldwide Technology. These are great guys. Delivering business and technology outcomes around the world. Okay, yes, Silicon Valley in St. Louis. WWT. All right. Who wants to do Xbox and who wants to do Microsoft 365?
Let's mix it up.
All yours, you two, you crazy kids. Have at it. What, Microsoft 365, what's the latest?
Okay. Well, last week we were talking about a pretty big outage that Microsoft had with Microsoft 365 and Azure.
Whatever happened to that?
And guess what? They had another one this week.
Couldn't believe it.
I couldn't believe it either. When it started, my boss was texting me and he goes, are they actually having another outage? I'm like, yep. Yeah, I thought it was maybe a repeat or like I was seeing the news come back through a second time. But no, so the first week was an Azure authentication issue around Azure Active Directory. And then that affected a bunch of the other Microsoft 365 services because they all authenticate using Azure Active Directory. But this past week on October 7th, people started reporting they were having trouble with Teams and Exchange Online, Outlook.com, SharePoint, OneDrive for Business. And then I looked at the Azure status site and I saw, again, Azure Active Directory and Azure Networking Services were down, at least in the U.S., maybe other areas as well. So guess what? It wasn't even the same problem. It was another problem. This was a problem with their wide area network. And they started having something roll out that they made a very pointed issue of this, that even though they had tested it, they couldn't actually foresee how it would roll out until it started rolling out at scale, which doesn't seem like a great design. When it started rolling out at scale, there was a problem. And then because so many Microsoft services use the Azure networking infrastructure to communicate across regions, everything else started getting affected. So yeah, 2 weeks in a row, pretty bad and big Azure and Microsoft 365 outages. As I very understatedly said in my blog post, not a good look for the Microsoft cloud. People were like, not a good look. This is like outrageous. Like this is huge, right? And now I'm looking at this very moment at Microsoft 365 status account, which if people don't follow this on Twitter, you should. MSFT 365 status. And they just had another problem that was a shorter one, but it again affected the admin center. And the problem with all these outages affecting the admin center is Microsoft tells you, go look at your admin center to see what we're doing or where we're at, what's wrong. And if it is behind the authentication mechanism and you aren't logged in, you can't see the admin center, right? So you're just flying blind, basically. So yeah, I don't know, guys. I know we're in a pandemic and like all that kind of stuff and people are working from home and all that kind of stuff, but still this is not reassuring to see this happening.
but okay. I'm trying to think of a silver lining. These things happen.
Some people say, you know, cut them a break. It's the pandemic.
No, you can't COVID wash that.
You can't because you know what? At the very beginning of the pandemic, they did all these things to really make sure the cloud would stand up, right? They did extra over and above and they did a great job. They were like reallocating resources and shoring things up, adding more servers. So it's not the pandemic that's to blame here, I would say. But 2 weeks in a row like that, that's really bad.
Well, what you don't want is to give the impression that you're just kind of not doing a good job of redundancy or reliability.
Right, right.
Everybody, I think, understands, and there's no cloud service that hasn't had outages.
No.
But you want to feel like, well, this is pretty reliable, pretty robust, and they do, you know, things happen, but they do everything they can to make sure they don't. And yet, when you get two in a row like that, that starts to erode confidence, I think.
This is why I use LibreOffice and I don't trust the cloud.
This is why I use my hard drive never crashes.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah, the problem, I can see this being an issue, and I'm curious how interconnected Microsoft 365 services and Azure were, because they don't completely run on top of Azure. Some parts of them run on Azure. But when you see there's a networking issue or an or an authentication issue. All of these things are tied tightly together. And so when one thing goes down, it brings everything down, right? It's all so tightly woven now and interconnected, even across the globe, right? Like you see people saying, okay, it's affecting not just the US, but because it's an Azure Active Directory issue, it's affecting other regions too. And that's the kind of blessing and curse of the cloud. Like it's all one big happy family, but when you have an outage, that's not so happy, right?
Then it's just a normal family.
Yeah. Then it's a normal family fighting and squabbling. And there's 600
dysfunction over in the corner apartment. And that weird uncle.
Yeah. 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 So I'm really hoping next week we're not going to see the hat trick, another Azure outage and Microsoft 365 going down.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I bet you a few people at Microsoft are hoping the same thing.
Oh, somebody's going to be back there going, okay, guys, like we got to like get a grip on this.
Were they the same causes for both outages? Was it just just a bad coincidence?
I mean, both of them did have something to do with Azure Active Directory, but everything in the cloud has to do with Azure Active Directory, right, pretty much. So, two totally different sets of things bringing down the same set of services, pretty much.
And were they pretty forthcoming with the reasons? And
yes.
Yeah.
Which is good. So Microsoft's been really good about publishing those root cause analysis. So if you want to see those, you can go to Azure status page and look at the history page, and you can see their whole explanation of exactly what happened and the steps they're going to try to take to make sure it doesn't happen again. And if you are an admin, you can see this in your dashboard for your Microsoft 365 services under the health tab. You can see your past history and go click on something and see the report, download the report and check that. But yeah, it's a little worrisome.
Yeah.
I feel like my whole job the past 2 weeks has been covering outages, which isn't fun or good.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you don't want to. And also I feel like, isn't it funny, but I feel that I bear some blame because, and I'm sure you do too, because we're cloud advocates. No, I didn't break it. But I'm a believer in the cloud, and I would guess you are too. And Paul too. So it pains me a little bit when it's not reliable, because then there's these bozos who come along and say, see, I told you the cloud wasn't reliable.
I know. Yeah.
And honestly, it's going to get more reliable, don't you think?
It could only get more reliable than this past week, but
it's depressing.
Yeah, sure.
I feel bad about it.
It has been reliable. I think the net reliability has been great.
People forget their hard drives crashed. Things happened to on-prem too. More often,
and
probably.
When you look at their uptime rates, like they're not even offering to compensate customers, which means their uptime rate hasn't gone below the threshold in their service level agreement. So even with these two outages, it seems like they're still like 99.99 something.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
If anything, I think we're
sensitive.
Sensationalizing it.
Yes.
No.
Well, in a way, we are kind of, right?
Yeah.
No, because before, even 5 years ago, like when we really didn't have, or longer probably, maybe 10 years ago when we didn't have Twitter, if there was a giant outage like this, the only way you would know is somebody would email you about it if they could send email, right? Or call you on a phone.
The reason this is a concern is because we're all working from home, right?
Right.
This is notable because of the situation. You know, this gets piled on the list of, just when you thought 2020 couldn't get any worse.
Yeah.
You know.
I know. Right. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm just hoping this was a fluke and 2 weeks in a row, and hopefully
This year is the battle testing that these cloud services need.
It is.
You know?
I know.
And they'll make
it
corrections.
Really,
but, we can get out on the other side of this thing. These services will be all the more reliable as a result.
Yep. Let's hope. I mean, they're doing so many things on the back end with Azure. They've done several blog posts about this where they explain all the things they've done to shore up Azure and reallocate workloads across the globe and how they've added servers. I mean, they've done a lot, and they've really, you know, we always joke about telemetry, but they've looked at all their telemetry and they can see this is the best hour to do blah. That's why these outages were so crazy. They happened in the middle of the workday on East Coast time, right? So you're like, wait, are you rolling out a fix like at 2 p.m. on a workday East Coast time? Really?
See, my worry is that this is some deeper ulterior thing on the on the part of like hackers or something, that this is a pre-election probing of systems and
No, it sounds like it's more internal. Like they admit both times, like, we shouldn't have done what we did. Like, we rolled this thing out at scale and that wasn't a good idea. So,
Okay. That's all right.
Yeah. No, it's better than knowing it's a ransomware or some of the crazy, security breach kind of thing, which it's not.
Yep.
So,
yeah. And then another bad news.
And I also don't want to be an apologist. And I know you don't want to either, but
no, I don't. And whenever people say to me, like, this is why I tell people not to go to the cloud, I'm like, okay, so you know what I'm going to say, right? It happens to people on-prem too. It just isn't at the scale, right?
This impacted me for 30 minutes one day when I couldn't get Teams to work on my phone. And by the time I got home and booted up my computer, it was fine. So, and I don't mean to say that just because it didn't really happen to me, it's not a big deal, but I mean,
no, that's what you're saying.
You're saying, so what, everyone else? I only was down 30 minutes.
Yeah, that I know of.
It would be tough if you're at work and you need to get something done and you can't use the resource that you're counting on to get it done.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I feel your pain.
We've all experienced that. It happens.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No, because especially during the pandemic, you're the IT person and everybody's remotely working or trying to use Teams. And then they're all pinging you because they're like, what's wrong with Teams? Why can't I get on Teams? I'm supposed to have a meeting on Teams,
but if
right?
If one of the guys pinging that guy, I mean, take that time. Go do your laundry.
I see this happen sometimes with Zoom. And, Lisa's got a very important sales call and it's not up. That's a big deal.
And
it's a black mark in her book. You know, she's not going to forget it. And if it happens a couple times, she's going to look for an alternative tool. So it's reliability is important.
It is important. Very important.
Now,
but transparency also is important.
And I'm glad that they are being very forthright. Yep. That's important. I agree with you. This is what happened. Here's what we're going to do. Make sure it doesn't happen again. That really goes a long way, I think.
Yes.
It's not like it was Larry in operations. I'm sorry. I know his mother, and I can't fire him. So we're going to try to keep him away from the buttons. We're so sorry.
No more birthday cake at work.
Microsoft is working to fix the subscription cancellation problems on LinkedIn Premium. It's like Hotel California, huh? You can't check
pretty
out
much.
What's going on.
Yeah. So this is another, quote, cloud. So you know when we use the word cloud, we don't just mean like the actual cloud like Azure, but sometimes we also use cloud to mean subscriptions, right? And one of the ways Microsoft sells subscriptions is to a service called LinkedIn Premium. Well, I started hearing from customers late last week that they couldn't get out of LinkedIn Premium. Like they said, the cancel button is gone. Like it's been removed. And I was like, come on, has it? And I looked, I'm like, yeah, it has. There's no more cancel button. And
yikes.
People were, yeah. So
it's expensive too. It's not cheap.
It's not cheap. So there's one plan that's the career plan. It's $30 a month. And the other, the business premium is $50 a month basically. So it's not like just some little like $3 a month thing, right? Then I looked at the help forum and I'm like, oh, wait, people are like screaming about this. Like there's hundreds of people on there like saying, hey, what did you guys do? So I pinged them this week. And as soon as I pinged them, this is responsiveness and transparency, I guess, they fixed it. so they now are said they're working on the fix. They're rolling it out and they admit that, yes, there was a problem and it was a bug, not a feature.
It's just a bug. That's all right. These things happen.
Yeah, just a bug, you know. But of course, you know, because all our suspicious minds work this way, I'm like, oh, they took the cancel button away or hit it to make it really hard to cancel. Just like the cable company, you know, when you want to cancel a service, you're like, I can't cancel it. Like, I can't get through, right? So, yeah, they said they uncovered a bug in their settings and privacy page that some members found affecting their cancellation flow from the page. Well, actually, the button was completely gone, but okay. And now they're trying to reach out to the people who are affected, and they're offering refunds and trying to work with people and be more transparent about how this works and put in more checks and balances. So if you're one of the people affected and you're suspicious now or scared to try to subscribe to something like this, they say they're going to start adding new reminder emails. So if you have a free trial and you're about to get charged, they're going to start sending you an email, which I'm surprised they aren't already doing, but yep, they're going to start doing that.
Good.
And when you're auto-renewing for a period, they'll send you an email to tell you, hey, by the way, you're going to auto-renew, which is good. Again, transparency for the win.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It's another one of those things.
It's expensive.
I know. Yeah. If you use there's a recruiter premium, and there's also one that's like for salespeople. Yeah. Those are up to $100 a month, yeah. Right? They're definitely premium. As the name says.
Now, I don't suppose there'll be many a tear shed about this, but Microsoft Office 2010 and 2016 for the Mac are no longer in support.
Should we have a moment of silence? Or
is there a replacement? Oh, well, yeah, 2019.
Yeah. And Microsoft wants you, well, their favorite replacement, obviously, is they would like you to subscribe to Office 365.
Which is
Microsoft
such a good deal, you should just do it.
It is a good deal.
Yeah.
It is.
If you use it, I don't actually use it all that much.
Right,
I'm still
worried
just
it.
For the storage. But even but if all you want is storage,
yeah,
it's a good deal.
$8 That's a month, true. Yeah.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
And I use it enough that I just, it's like, well, I'm going to pay for it because I'm going to, you know, I use it a few times a year. I need Excel or something.
Right.
And then the storage, yeah.
Yeah. It was funny. Last night, somebody tweeted to me about this, and he goes, hey, thanks for telling me this expired on the day it expired. And I'm like, they've been telling you, like, this was going to be out of service and support for a while, but it's Office 2010. And he goes, so are you telling me I can't run Windows 7 and Office 2010 safely anymore? Like, that is exactly what I'm telling you.
Boy, welcome to the 21st century, guys.
I was kind of like, wow. But you know what? There are people out there. I have to confess, like, up until about 2 years ago, I was still running Office 2010 because it was one of those things. Like, it works. I don't need something more recent. And now I have an Office 365 plan, but I don't have the plan with the local apps. I only have the plan where you get the back end services because on the front end, all I ever use is the web apps, right? So I use like Word for web, Excel for web, PowerPoint for web. I don't need the full client. And I just do everything through office.com pretty much in terms of Office anymore, which is, you know, their one-stop shop, especially on mobile. They have lightweight versions of all the apps that are free, and you can just use them on your phone and do things like, you know, look at a PDF and do e-signatures, other things like that, right on your phone without paying anything.
I think that app's exactly as much Office as you need on your phone.
Me too.
You
know? Agree. Yep.
Perfect.
Yep. I know. And the web apps are really good. I mean, I don't have a problem with the web apps. So
answer me
this. If you're a power user, you will.
Can you use the web apps free, like without a subscription? I think you can, right?
You can, but there are limitations.
Okay.
And I don't remember what those are. They're probably functional limitations. Like, so it's kind of interesting because the web apps sometimes get features before the native apps.
Right.
And so that recent feature they added to Word for transcription and so forth, recording and transcription, or transcription, I guess, is only on the web app today. And I bet if you weren't paying for it, you wouldn't get it. I think you have to have a Microsoft 365 subscription to even see that.
Yeah, I think you do too.
Because sometimes I want to tell people, if they don't want to buy Office, that they could use those web apps. And I think that, I mean, they're at least as good as, you know, WordPad.
For most people, they're good
enough. Or Google Docs or whatever, right?
Yeah.
For most people, they're fine.
And they're the familiar interface. So if you've been using Office, and you really, most people don't use all the features. They use a tiny subset. And if the subset's in the web version, which it is probably
Word. That's another feature that's kind of unique to the web right now, at least in Word, and I think maybe in PowerPoint, is you get the simplified ribbon instead of the gigantic ribbon. Right. You see the, and I think it looks better.
Later. Yeah.
Obviously, there are fewer features. That's why they can do it. But I think it looks nice. And it's particularly nice for the web.
And I'll tell you why this comes up, because I frequently get on the radio show people who say, well, I don't want to give up my Windows PC because I use Office. And and you know, most of the time this is people who are not hardcore users. They're just used to using Word or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to, and I want to, from them, I think Chromebook is probably a better choice, a safer, easier, less expensive choice. And they say, but I need Office. And I said, and I think if I want to say, well, but okay, if you first of all, you can use Google Docs, but if you really want something that looks like Word, looks like Excel. There is a free web-based version of Office that's pretty darn capable. I think
there's also LibreOffice. Don't know about just counting that.
No, choice. I'm not going to. I do mention LibreOffice, but only if you're using Windows, Mac, or Linux, because it doesn't work on a Chromebook. But
no, I keep running into people who've never heard of the Office web apps.
Yeah, like, I know.
People will say to me, like, are you telling me there are web versions of the Office apps? I'm like, yes, I am telling you that. And they're like, why don't I know about this?
Literally,
I'm like,
been around for over 15 years. Like they have.
But they're also pretty good. They're not. You would think, oh well, it's the web. It can't be very good. They're actually pretty good.
They're good. Yeah. They're good enough for most use cases. I mean, unless you're somebody who needs to do some complex formatting and things like that, then it won't be good enough for you.
Right. But I'm gonna have, and this is my fault, because I pay for Office, so I don't ever, you know, think of it. But I really should just try using the web version without subscribing, you know, without signing in, and just see. Use it for a while. I bet it would do everything I need to do. I really don't tax Office particularly.
Mm-mm. Yep.
I bet if you use Google Docs, it would be very comparable. And it's a lot better interface.
The interface is very different, but yeah, probably. Yeah, I think so.
All right. Just using your time for my benefit.
No, and can't you pin the Office web apps as PWAs?
Sure. Can you?
Right.
Not maybe PWAs.
You can Outlook.
So I'm going to be doing a series on the web apps soon.
Oh, good, Paul. This is good.
And yeah, I got to do a gaming thing first, but it's that is a little complex. But this is something I need to test. But if you have the Office app in Windows 10, and you don't have the Office apps installed, you know, the native apps. Yeah. Pretty sure the way this thing works is a front end to the web apps.
Oh,
so when you can see your most recent documents listed, you click one, it will open in the Word, you know,
that's
the
nice.
Web app.
Oh yeah,
so
does.
I gotta formally make sure that's true. But
yep,
it's they're very usable. You might have to change a couple of habits, but
right. Okay. Okay. So there's a choice if you're on the Mac and you don't want to buy Office 2019 or subscribe. And isn't Office 2020 for the Mac coming soon? I think it is, right?
Yeah, 2020, second half of 2021, there'll be new clients for Windows and the Mac.
So it'll be Office 2021.
Yep. Okay. Probably 2022 if they brand it like they usually do. Yeah.
I assume that the Office app isn't available on the Mac, but I suppose on the Mac you could just have a tab for office.com and that would achieve the same thing.
Right. That's what I was just thinking. You know, maybe if you wanted to wait, you could wait.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's talk about Outlook. And whenever I say let's talk about Outlook, I have to wonder which Outlook am I talking about?
Which Outlook?
Yeah, so I got really excited when I was tipped off by Tony Redmond that Microsoft had a couple sessions at Ignite this year about something called One Outlook, this initiative they have to consolidate the Outlook user experience across its many clients, but also the architecture on the back end. And we've seen some of this work in the past. It's not like this is something that just suddenly is happening, but one of the good examples of this is when they consolidated the back ends for Outlook.com and Outlook on the web, which is the commercial version. And of course, then later they consolidated, so to speak, the UIs. They're very similar looking now. So if you're used to one, you can go to the other and they look the same. It's kind of nice. I mean, before they didn't. But there are approximately 117 other Outlook clients. And so Microsoft is trying to make them look and feel and work the same where possible. And of course, when I hear this, and I know everyone doesn't agree with this, so if you are an Outlook fan, you can just block your ears for 30 seconds. But I think Outlook for Windows is the biggest piece of junk ever on Windows. It needs to be torn down and started over. And I keep hoping, you know, that Outlook on the or either one of the web apps will take its place, which I think would be viable, or maybe they could work with the Outlook mobile app and kind of go in that direction. Now, for fans of Outlook, and the reason that they're fans is probably because they've been using it since the late 1990s, and they rely on specific functionality that's in this app that isn't in these other clients, and I get that. And so we can respect that. That's fine. But the good news for you folks is they're not replacing the Outlook app. They're going to – they're basically – it's kind of strange. They're using React web APIs or web interfaces for all the new functionality. And because all of their apps can embed this, that they can just add new features that way and just write it once and it will work everywhere. So if you can kind of picture Outlook 20, what's the newest version? Yeah, it doesn't matter. Outlook for Windows, it, you know, had multiple panes and everything. And so if you're doing something like, here's a schedule, I want to have a meeting, I want to see when everyone is free and select the right time, that interface now might be written in React. For the web, it's a web interface. And if you go to Outlook Mobile or Outlook on the web, obviously, to do the same thing, you'll see the same UI, you know, scaled to the device and the size and shape of the UI and all that stuff. So that's good. It's, you know, it's not quite the full, you know, redo I was kind of hoping for, but at least they're kind of moving in that direction. And actually, Mary Jo has a note that this predates even what I was saying.
It does. 2014, I found it. I found some references to them trying to consolidate the office code base right across.
I would imagine they talked about it this week because they've made some progress in some way, probably with the React stuff. Okay. That's further back than I thought.
So you know what's funny? They're still not saying anything about the future of the built-in mail client for Windows 10.
Like, yeah.
Like they're not saying this will become Outlook or this is going to go away or nothing, right?
You mean Outlook Express?
No, you know how on Windows 10, there's like a built-in mail?
I know.
What do you even call that thing?
They should still call it Outlook Express. People are dying for Outlook Express to come back.
I know.
It's technically Outlook.
Mail.
I'm sorry.
It's just mail, right?
It's technically
it's
mail and
plain
calendar.
Old mail, right?
Yeah. Mail and calendar.
Yeah, like Windows Mail. Like Windows Mail was an app that debuted in Windows Vista, was probably some descendant of Outlook Express, whatever that became over time. Right. But this is a different kind of thing. This was built with web technologies, right? It's like JavaScript based. Mm-hmm. It's a modern, what do you call it, UWP app. It's a piece of junk. God, it's like imagine what a choice it would be. It's like you have to use Outlook for the Windows or Mail.
I actually like Outlook for Windows.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything because I completely agree with Paul, but I know that that's a buzzsaw to say Outlook is a piece of crap.
So for you to have a good experience with Outlook for Windows, you have to only be using Exchange.
It's great for Exchange. Great. It's the Exchange.
That's what I use.
Oh, that's what you use? Yeah. Oh, well, that explains it.
Yeah, it's probably okay.
Yeah.
But it's not a replacement for a mailer, for a MUA, a moi. It is, that's what they call them, a mail user agent. It's not a good replacement.
You're supposed to smack your lips when you say it, like a moi.
It is. So if you're using IMAP, no.
Yeah.
No, it's a bad choice. Listen,
you could connect it to your Gmail account and then tell me what it's like after next
even
weekend.
Even worse.
It's unbelievable.
I try to use Gmail as little as possible, so
Well, if you're using Outlook for Windows, that's you're in the right environment for that.
I do grant you. If you're an Exchange user, I've never actually used Exchange. I mean, I've never had anybody provide Exchange server for me, so I don't know. Yeah. But I would believe that because that's what it really is.
It's a front end to Exchange.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Outlook, I'm sorry, a commercial Microsoft 365 account, technically you do have an Exchange.
You do. Yep.
If I use Outlook.com, that's Exchange?
No. Well, actually, it does connect to Outlook.com, and that probably does work fine because it's whatever they're calling Exchange ActiveSync these days. That probably is fine as well. That's part of the problem. This thing, when it was first introduced 1997 probably, it was not an internet email client at all. And it was just I think they called it a Mappy client back in the day, the Microsoft whatever that was. And then, you know, it's an Exchange client, but they have, you know, they have internet email capabilities, but it's still, it's the type of thing where it brings up like a rich text editor with like you would get in like Word or something. And it's just not, it doesn't interoperate well with the rest of the world. It's a weird thing modern. That it's like,
it's what? It's not modern.
It's not modern. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, see, anyway. I am a fan of IMAP. I'm a friend, you know, I think using Exchange is like using IIS for your web server.
You are a fan of open standards, and that's
I'm a fan of open standards, exactly.
Yeah. So this is a great example of something that maybe shouldn't have lasted this long. But if you love Exchange or Outlook, I guess, dear God, do not email me. I don't care. I don't want to hear about that.
Email me because I feel you. I'm there.
Please do not tell me about it. I know.
Everyone, his email address is.
Thank you. MJF at.
No, because I say that on the radio show. People say, I use Outlook. And I'm always like, oh, please, why?
Like, oh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, it's so awful.
You know what? It's a habit. And you just, if you're in that world.
It's almost like if somebody said, you know, Lotus is really Lotus Notes is a really good email client. And I want to go.
Yeah. Oh, it's come a long way. You probably don't know.
Yeah, that's right. It's come a long way as a classic. Oh, it's so much better than it used to be. You just don't know.
Yep. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Actually, mail is a funny thing because really it's broken. It's so broken. Anyway,
but we keep using.
I know it's broken because during this show, I got an email from something that is not Flix, not Netflix, telling me that my credit card has been declined. Yeah, and that if I could kindly sign in,
could you please give us their Russian web server new number? Yeah,
yeah,
it's so broken, and yet we use it. I mean, I guess Slack is just as broken. It's not like it's like
look, Slack is quicker.
It's broken more quickly.
The breakages happen more quickly.
Yeah.
I know. I just maybe it's people. I just don't want to communicate. I don't know what it is, but
I feel like people. It's like you know, everyone predicted Year of Desktop Linux forever and continue to predict that. Oh, I feel like people predict the email death forever, right?
Can't.
But it's still here, and people still use it a lot, right?
I spend a disproportionate amount of time trying to find a good email client, then trying to set it up, then trying to configure it, then trying to create filters and folders and all that stuff. It's probably the number one thing I do online.
That's why I use the web clients. I can't. It's just too much. There's nothing. There is nothing. I don't think it's possible to build a good
one. It's so depressing. It's like our number one way of communicating, and it's broken.
Yeah. It doesn't work, and no one seems inclined to fix it. Yeah.
No. It's just like, if it is broke, don't fix it.
Yeah. Just live with it. Get over it, man.
I don't like Outlook. It's like, we'll just use Exchange. Well, okay, but... You're not listening.
Does Outlook still do the big PST thing? Like everything, all your data, everything in one big blob of a file? It still does that, right?
I had to migrate that.
So they have like OSTs and other things now. But I used to carry around my PST file on a floppy disk in my shirt pocket. No, literally, because this thing was so unreliable. You couldn't afford to lose it.
No, because you're so scared you're going to lose it, right? You're like, oh, my God.
No, this is true.
Your address book, your calendar, and all your email are in one
I had two things. It was a PST file, and there was a tree.dat file that was for my FTP program that had all my passwords and stuff in it.
And my registry. I carry my registry with me at all times.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, a clean copy of it.
A clean copy,
crazy.
Right.
Yep.
I'm sure it's better now. But I still have this taste in my mouth from the days when the PST file could get bigger than 2 gigabytes and then be unusable. And, I mean, this is just all these just nightmare scenarios.
Breaking it in half? Like, somebody's like, just break it in half. I'm like, I don't even know what I'm doing. What are you telling me?
I don't want to manage that. Now, I guess in theory now, we don't keep mail locally, so that's probably not the problem it used to be. But,
Well, that didn't really solve the Outlook bloat problem, did it? But, okay.
No. Yeah.
Every once in a while I try it, and then I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the problem.
I know.
It's so there's this, there's a Linux-y kind of saying, sorry, folks, but that no app is really done until it can be an email client.
There you go. By the way, it's only a matter of time before Teams turns into one. It's already got calendar
exactly
in there.
Exactly right.
You know what's coming.
Yeah. Like, that's the end game. Yeah.
Yep. Oh, this
but
is
But you know, it's overdue. All what you're used to, because whenever I use Gmail, I'm kind of lost.
Gmail's awful. I will say
people like, do this in Gmail. I'm like, I use this so seldom, I just don't even know how to do
Gmail
this.
Pretends, for instance, that they're folders. They're not. There are no folders. Yeah. There's just tags.
Yeah, they've always done that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I I'm used to Gmail. I like it in the sense that I'm familiar with it, right? So it's probably what most Outlook people probably say about their program.
Yeah, Stockholm syndrome.
The thing about Gmail, you can be looking at an email and say, well, I want to reply to this. And you hit R, and R is the shortcut, and reply comes to you. Like, great. Well, now I'm looking at email. I want to send a new email. I hit N and nothing happens. Why?
Why isn't it N?
I can look it up. I know. Someone's going to tell me what the
shortcut is. Why isn't it N?
They will.
It's just like, why is it not logical? You know? I don't know. It's Google.
Oh, I'm glad I'm not alone in this. I actually found a pretty good open source client, and I found a pretty good Mac client. I have yet to find a good email client for Windows. I've tried the Bat and Pegasus, all these weird, you just get the feeling there's some guy who, you know, is got a big long beard.
Can I go back to Eudora?
Eudora was all right, right? Eudora was great.
I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked Eudora when I liked BB Edit. So when was that? 1998 or something? Right. Like,
I mean,
it was a long time ago.
Our good friend Steve Gibson still uses Eudora, I believe.
Of course. Of course.
He told me he finally stopped using Brief. He was still writing in Brief.
Brief?
What is Brief?
Brief is a DOS text editor.
I was going to say, what it sounds like is one of those DOS 3-in-1 things where you get like word processor, spreadsheet, and database.
No, it was a really good coding editor, but it had, you know, he knew all the keystrokes, right? It's like Emacs.
But he doesn't like Notepad?
No.
No. Come on, Steve.
No.
Steve's, come on, man.
Steve is really a great kind of straw man for the kind of the classic old geek who just,
he totally is.
I'm never going to change. Yeah.
Right. I could change.
Although he's running Windows 10, right? Isn't he?
He finally, I think, is on many machines, not all.
Okay.
And I think he's finally kind of, he's slowly crumbling. Giving into the 21st century.
Right.
Notepad is next. I'm telling you.
I honor his determination to continue to use what worked. Yep. And I'm sympathetic. Never surrender. Okay, let's see. What else? I'm looking at the notes here.
What else?
We did one Outlook. Let's do a late-breaking story.
Yeah, so this was announced, I think, during the recording of the show, but there's a new dev channel build of Windows 10 out there if you're into that kind of stuff. So this is what used to be the fast ring. And there's one new feature in settings, in advanced display settings. There's a way to change the refresh rate of your selected display. I don't know how this works today. I don't think I've ever had a display that supported multiple refresh rates or high refresh rates or anything like that. So anyway, there you go. So, you know, coming soon to a Windows 10 PC near you, I guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. I see people grumbling about how few new features are in the dev channel ring.
That's what we want.
I know. I would say my guess why there isn't a lot, and I've said this before, is I think most of the people working on Windows right now from an engineering standpoint are working on 10X. I do believe that.
Really?
And I think, they only had, last we knew, 5,000 Windows client engineers only. Yeah. But
they're working at home, I think
the priority for them, if they're still on the same path they were a few months ago, is to get 10X out on a single screen device. And it's funny, I've had a bunch of people lately saying to me, do you think they're still doing 10X? Because it's gotten so quiet about it. I do think they're still doing 10X. I do. And I think it's going to be a surprise.
It's got, if the surprise should be, it doesn't look anything like the thing they showed us before. Because honestly, Windows 10X, as they envisioned it during that brief period of time where we could get emulators and stuff, looks a lot like Surface Duo UI, which to me is very plain looking, you know?
Yeah.
And I hope it is some prettiness that can occur there. But I think part of the reason people are complaining is that Panos Panay took over Windows. And that signaled to the world that Windows was kind of back. Of course, with the pandemic, we'll talk about that in a second. We know it's back. And, you know, something must be happening, right? Why else would that, why would he want part of some legacy business if they weren't going to push forward? But, you know, that was really just a couple months ago, honestly. When was that, March or something? Yeah. I mean, it's not like, you know, the ship doesn't turn around immediately. So
it was even more recent. It was like summer, I think, that he took over.
But I mean, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. Right. It's not like this guy walks in the door and fingers, and then everyone was asleep at their desk and they wake up and they get to work. Right. I mean, so we'll see. I get it.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I don't know. We've said, but especially you, but also me, it would be nice to have a little lull period where they just kind of fix stuff and did some fit and finish with Windows, regular Windows 10, and didn't have all these tons of big bang features come out.
Really not nice. Even have a single feature in it that's worth discussing.
Yeah. That's well, 20H2 is not going to have much, right?
That's what I mean. 20H2. I mean, like, it's been a couple of months since the last release. I mean, we don't need new stuff. It's fine.
Right. 20H2, by the way, it's called the October update. So we've got about two more weeks when they roll this out.
Right? We're starting to run out of October. Isn't this why they dropped the numbers? They should just not even use a month. Just say it's the second half. That gives you December 31st.
Right? Call it the 20H2 update. Here's an idea, gang.
Yeah. No, but then they called it the October update in something. And I'm like, oh, wait. So they're going to roll it out in October.
You think they will?
I do. Yeah. I do think they will. There's no reason not to. It's ready. Like, they've been testing it. They've updated it with cumulative updates. It's like, all right, you could start having seekers look for it anytime now. Right.
What could go wrong?
No, mm-hmm. Oh, don't ask that after.
But this one's a minor. this is a polish minor bug fix, right?
Yes.
But you got to remember. So if you have 2004, it's just another cumulative update. You reboot your computer. It comes up in 30 seconds. It's fine. But if you never install 2004, this is still a major update because you're basically
doing 2004 as well.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and that was fun for all of us.
Yeah.
it still is.
it's a gift that keeps on giving.
I know. Mm-hmm.
We do want to talk a little bit about the Xbox, and we're going to do that in just a second. But first, a word from Melissa. You wouldn't want your customer data to go bad, would you? I mean, all you have to do is remember back to that time. Remember you were, it was a long night, got up the next morning, you're tired, you're hungry, you can't wait to dig into that bowl of Cap'n Crunch, and you reach right into the refrigerator and pour in that delicious, cold, refreshing milk, except you didn't check the Best Buy date, and that milk is maybe a little awful, and you just ruined a bowl of Cap'n Crunch, and that's a terrible thing. A bowl of Cap'n Crunch is a terrible thing to waste.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Especially if it has those peanut butter things in it.
Oh, no, don't put those in there. No, just plain old Cap'n Crunch. Lacerate the roof of your mouth, Cap'n Crunch. That's all you need in life to be happy. Well, your data is kind of like that. 30% of customer data goes bad maybe every year. How about that? Melissa has been around now for 35 years to help people fix their customer data. Over the years, they've added more and more information. Now with Melissa, you can make sure your addresses are complete and accurate, your emails, your phone numbers, your names. It's not unusual for data to be misentered. Customers do it all the time, and your customer service reps might do it as well. Plus, people move, phone numbers change, email addresses change. Melissa can help you keep your data up to date, because there's nothing worse than missing a customer because you have the wrong address, or bothering somebody because you sent him two copies of the same catalog. In fact, they do deduping too. Their matching and deduplication tools help you uncover, merge, and purge hard to find duplicate records. That's really important. Plus, they can fill in the gaps. You can add customer demographic information to your records, not just name, address, and phone number, but property and mortgage data, marital status, social media handles, emails, phone numbers, everything. clean up those records, complete them. There's something really nice about looking at your customer list, for instance, or your mailing list, and just looking at it and seeing it's all there, it's all perfect. You can tell, you know, it's clean, it's exactly right. No more, no less. That's what Melissa does. And they do it in whatever way you need it. They're very flexible. They have on-prem, they have a web service. You could use their secure FTP processing, upload a database, download the clean version. They offer software as a service delivery as well. They even have a very good API, so you can, and a lot of companies do this, incorporate it into your customer service workflow. You, in fact, you probably encountered it when you're on the phone with somebody and you start the name and address and they finish it for you. Same thing happens online now to me all the time. That's Melissa at work. And by the way, never fear about privacy with Melissa. They treat your data like it's their own. They constantly undergo independent security audits. They are committed to data security, privacy, and, because it's true in many industries, compliance. So, you know, no matter what your regulatory situation is, they can help. They have the utmost data dedication to your data security by implementing strong controls and safeguards and, of course, those regular audits. That's why 10,000 businesses trust the address experts. Trust Melissa to be your foundation for data-driven success. And by the way, as we are in the middle of this COVID-19 crisis, they want to help essential workers and communities that support them. So if your organization qualifies, Melissa will give you 6 months of absolutely free service by applying online at melissa.com/twit. Don't put up with sour customer data. It'll really put a crimp in your Rice Krispies. Try Melissa's API in the developer portal. It's easy to log on, sign up, and start playing in the sandbox 24/7. Just go there right now, melissa.com/twit. And oh, by the way, they're offering 1,000 records cleaned for free so you can see how it works. It looks so good. When I uploaded my customer, my Christmas list, which has been a hassle every year, the Christmas cards, to get it back. And you know, it's just perfect. It's clean. You could tell every field filled out. It's just perfect. That's a nice feeling. Melissa, melissa.com/twit. Thank you, Melissa, for your support. Thank you for doing a great job. Thank you for supporting Windows Weekly by using that special address, melissa.com/twit. I really want to get a Windows machine. I feel like I'm getting a little left out now. I've unfortunately converted all my Windows.
What are you doing? What do you mean you don't have a Windows machine?
I don't have a Windows machine.
You're surrounded by computers.
Not even one?
No, I made them all Linux machines. And
wow.
You have a compulsion problem. I think you don't jump out of a perfectly working airplane, and you don't, you know.
Wait a minute. You're putting the words Windows and perfectly working in together?
Yeah. That's a little
working.
Much.
Working.
Sort of working. You don't working jump out of an airplane until it hits the ground? Is that what you're saying?
Well, if you see the ground coming, jump. It's like in an elevator. If the elevator, falls, jump right at the end.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? So what would you get? I'm not going to get a Surface. I'm sorry.
I don't think you should.
I like that HP. That new HP Spectre is pretty.
Yes, the 14-inch 3x2 display. Yes, yeah. That's what I'm really curious about.
Okay.
Anything, all the ThinkPad type products are amazing.
I love ThinkPads. I've always loved ThinkPads.
By the way, new Dell XPS 13 and 15.
I have last year's 13. It's excellent.
Yeah, so I'm reviewing the 15 now, and it's might be my favorite computer of all time. It's unbelievable.
Really?
The XPS 13, I got the developer edition. Actually, I got the January 2020 one, so it is technically this year's.
Okay.
And it's wonderful, but I have heard enough problems that I'm starting to wonder if Dell has a QC issue, a quality control issue.
Okay.
I do think...
Like something that appears over time?
No. I just think there are a number... I think it's not unusual to get one that's DOA or never worked right.
Oh, boy.
You can, obviously send it back and get it fixed, but the number of those seems to be on the upswing. Maybe that's just, it's all anecdotal. I'm not saying I have any.
Well, it could be. Yeah, I don't know. It could be. Yeah. But I mean, look, Lenovo has expanded their lineup dramatically. They have amazing machines.
Yeah.
And HP too. I mean, HP NV15 is really good.
Those are three. All three manufacturers, I think, are doing really good jobs with Windows machines, laptops.
Yep.
That's, you know, so I'm
and then, frozen. You know, you could always go the Alcantara route because.
what about an AMD laptop?
Yeah. No. Oh, well, so the HP. Not the Surface one, but the newer generation chips. So I have an HP. It must be an NVX360, I think, 13-inch AMD 4000 series. Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then ThinkPad has AMD chips in some of their machines.
Yeah, the price is better, right?
Yeah, it's should cheap. Be. That should machine's be. Probably $650 bucks, maybe.
It should be.
That's excellent.
Okay. I don't want to spend.
Or you
money.
Could just convert one of your Linux PCs back to
I could
Windows.
Actually, this, you know, I started to do that with this T420, this nice Lenovo 470. This is not a bad Lenovo. It's only a few years old. But I couldn't. Yeah. I was having trouble making the. You know, it's easy to make a Windows installer key if you have Windows.
That's
Turns
true.
Out, if you're not running Windows, it's a little more difficult. So I have to find somebody with a Windows machine.
You can do this.
I bet you know people.
Actually, I think there's some people down the hall that might have a Windows machine.
I have a vague memory of requiring Mary Jo to make me a Surface RT recovery disk so I can could get my Surface RT going.
Nice. I think we were in the car and you're like, you're like, get your laptop out of the trunk, make me a recovery disk.
I need you to make a disk.
That's funny. That's very funny. Yeah. It's good to have friends.
I know.
PC sales actually are doing pretty well.
Yeah, this year has been the best thing to ever happen to the computer. everything else is terrible. But I want to say the previous quarter sale, PC sales up, I think, 7% year over year.
And that we thought was all work from home. But by now, doesn't everybody have a work from home computer?
Well, no. So actually, if they're having problems with supplies of laptops, Chromebooks of all kinds of PCs, whatever. Wow. And this probably would have been even bigger if they could have made enough of these things.
Wow. You know?
Yeah. So I want to say, where is this thing? So I average numbers between Gartner and IDC, but 73 million units. Lenovo sold one out of every four of those, by the way, 18.8 million units. HP was number two at 17, and Dell was in third place with 11.4 million units. All of those companies and Apple as well all experienced double-digit growth, by the way, year over year. And that hasn't happened since my kid was wearing diapers. It's been a long time.
That's good.
I'm probably not joking. It's been a long time.
Is it going to be sustained? I mean, I would have thought last quarter was that.
No,
was
it's
it.
Nope. Oh. But here's the interesting thing. I bet last year, off the top of my head, I want to say PC sales grew slightly, like probably 1.something%, 1.1%, something like that. This year, we should see a, you know, high single digits growth year over year. Assuming the COVID thing ends eventually, this is temporary, right? So it's interesting that 1 month before the pandemic hit, I don't remember if it was IDC or Gartner or both, but at least one of those companies announced that they expected PC sales to fall this year, next year, and the year after.
Wow.
You know, before kind of leveling off, and maybe that would be the new normal. But of course, COVID happened, and, you know, now PCs are in demand. So yeah, it's temporary, but this is still, you know, we're still, I mean, we'll see what the year looks like when we, you know, when it ends, of course. But I bet they'll grow. Of course, they'll grow this quarter. It's a holiday season. You know, it will be good. So.
And there's some, there's some really nice machines out there.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff to look forward to.
And there's a laptop shortage among students, at least out here there is.
Really?
You know, so, yeah.
So they can't make them fast enough is the problem.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah. I think a lot of these companies were obviously not geared up for this volume because, you know, the world had kind of settled into where they were. And then it's like, oh, you know, we got to start making these things again.
How interesting.
Yeah.
You just never know. You just never know.
Who could have predicted this, though? I mean.
Well, there's always someone who does. But the rest of us,
I'm not going to say anything, but the virus came from the same country those laptops come from. I'm just saying.
Let's get that conspiracy going.
that country was doing pretty good selling phones, though. I don't think they had to bring back PCs.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the Chinese computer conspiracy.
It is.
Sure.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Just kidding. Michael everyone.
And Jeff Bezos got together in their secret lab and they said, we're going to bring back the PC. We're going to have to lose a couple of people, but it will be worth it.
Somebody's going to say, yeah, I saw it on a podcast. I know it's true.
Exactly. Someone will have. Yep. Well, if it's one of our listeners, they'll know exactly what we said and what episode it was.
Yes.
You said it, Paul, exactly. I remember it was on. It was September, I mean, October 14th.
I told you this story, right? This actually happened to me. Did I tell you this? This is amazing.
No.
Mary Jo was there. So we had just gotten off the stage, probably at Ignite last year, maybe. And there were a couple of guys waiting to say hi or whatever, and that's always cool. And I don't remember how this conversation went in this direction, but one of the guys I was talking to said, well, you said that Google would never buy YouTube. And I had to.
What was there?
Holy cow, what?
Reset. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he says, you said, you said that Google would never buy YouTube. And I said, when did I say that? And he said, well, you know, it was
2004.
Before Google. And I, so I said, okay. And I said, where did I say this? And he says, it was on Windows Weekly. So I looked it up and I did. Whatever year that was, 2000 years ago, 2 months before Google announced they were buying YouTube, I said, Google will never buy YouTube. Here's why. And I explained it in my own, you know, rationale at the time. But
that's the funniest thing ever.
I don't remember saying this. I mean, I don't think it was that stupid or crazy.
It was episode 382, and was at the 20-minute mark, and you said,
I guess, like, you know, we all celebrate our little victories, and we're all the heroes of our own stories, but we forget that we're the foils in other stories.
Well, we forget that this is all recorded and lives forever.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. You can't get away from it.
Like, okay, I don't remember that.
Did he say what I said? Did I go, oh, Paul, of course they will. I hope I did.
Oh, I'm sure you just very politely nodded your head. Mm-hmm.
You know, whatever. Sounds reasonable, Mr. Thoreau.
Behind the scenes, you're like, what a jerk. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I don't know. But
don't worry, because it's forget Google. Alta Vista is obviously.
Don't worry about that. Microsoft has MSN video. Bing, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Yep. I don't
know. Microsoft does have, it's pretty funny, Microsoft weighing in a little bit on the Apple Fortnite controversy. I think Microsoft's probably smart just to say, you know, I'll let those guys fight it out. Even though xCloud isn't going to be on iOS. Well, it will be, but it'll have to be a web app, which is going to be an interesting challenge.
Yep.
It's the same solution. Somebody else came up with that solution as well. And, if it works.
Amazon,
the Amazon gaming platform, Luna. Yeah. Okay, if it works, I guess. I mean, that's interesting that if it works, and which just underscores the fact that it really is streaming, folks. If it works in a browser, that's a streaming service.
There you go.
But they did have some advice.
I don't want to spend too much time on this because this is kind of divisive. There are people who, in a semi petty way, feel that Microsoft is upset because they lost mobile and they're lashing out at Apple. They're kind of, you know, humanizing this company as if it has this kind of central will. I think the problem is Microsoft is one of the many developers and one of the bigger ones who's on these platforms, and they understand that Apple's policies in particular just unfair, you know, that they take 30% off the top of subscriptions in addition to individual purchases. It's crazy. They don't allow you to communicate with your customers, all the things everyone already knows. So they kind of developed these 10 principles. They're applying it to their Microsoft store on Windows, and they're hoping that this will inspire other store makers, Google and Apple and whoever else, Amazon, whatever, to, you know, kind of follow the same. And of course, they won't, you know. But the problem I have with this, and it's actually not even in my article, but is there's a note in this Microsoft description of these 10 principles that says, yeah, we're not doing this for the Xbox. It's a different kind of store.
It would be good, but we're not going to do it.
And it's like, guys, okay, so, okay. I don't know.
It's an idea. It's a thought.
So
what are they not doing in the Xbox store that they're doing that they suggest others
everything.
Do? Everything.
Here's the thing. Look, you can make an argument that these stores are all kind of different, right? Windows is very different from iOS or Android because it has existed for decades, and people are used to getting software however they get. They used to get it on disk, and now they get it from the web. And that's the primary way that people acquire software. And by primary, I mean like high 90-something percent. This App Store thing that they did, just like the App Store on the Mac, has not really gone anywhere for a variety of reasons, but whatever. It's a kind of a minority way to get apps on Windows. Yeah, you know, Google has sideloading, but the truth is, even on Android or on iOS, where it's the only way, this is the accepted and normal way to get apps, the App Store. And it is high 90-something percent. It's probably high 99.99-something percent on Android, and it's 100% on Apple. They're just kind of different. I would argue that the Xbox Store, whatever they're calling it now, the Microsoft Store on Xbox, is actually pretty damn close to the iOS Store. So when and that's the problem. So when Microsoft comes out and says, look, we'd really like to see Apple do this, and then they say, well, we're not doing it on our platform, that's the most like iOS, it's like, well, there you go. So I don't know what you were hoping to accomplish, but I think you've just undercut your message.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
So, oh, well.
Xbox time.
Nap time.
Nap time. Take a break. Go pet well, Sriracha.
Hold on.
Hold on there. I'm just trying to give you some space.
This will be quick and painless.
I'm giving you some space to let your freak flag fly. Go ahead. Just do it.
There's several things, but they're all small. You know, so
don't make them too small. I got another ad coming, so you are the filler that keeps all the ads from bunching up.
I do feel like the filler. Thank you. Yes. So I'll do my best. As Leo just mentioned, Microsoft had an all hands meeting, and one of the things that leaked out of it was Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, telling his team that they will be on iOS and iPadOS with cloud streaming, which is the Project xCloud feature, sometime next year, and that the plan is to bring it with a web app. It's interesting. Right now, cloud streaming is only available through Xbox Game Pass and only on Android. Obviously, it needs to come to Windows. I think it needs to come to smart TVs. I think it needs to come to all the set-top boxes. I think it needs to come to Mac. And I think it needs to come to the Apple stuff, of course. So iOS and iPadOS, that is. I didn't invent this idea, but I had read an article maybe 2 or 3 months ago. Someone was kind of responding to someone being like a blogger or somebody, but responding to this notion of Apple's abuses in the App Store. And they're like, you know, if you want to end this monopoly, just write web apps, you know, just put the web apps out. And I think this is going to work fine. I think this is a good approach. I think this is the right kind of app, you know, for this kind of a thing, because it's all happening on the back end anyway. So it's really just a display layer through the browser. I bet it's going to work fine. So interesting. I don't know what's going on with Xbox Series X reviews, he says, winking. But at some point, we're going to see official unboxing videos and photo galleries of the Xbox Series X and S. By the way, speaking of which, if you notice, we talked about how strange it is that this series of consoles doesn't have a name. I can't, you know, give you an Xbox something name and refer to both of them at the same time. And so what Microsoft has taken to, which you can't say, but it's taken using the phrase Xbox Series X, then the straight slash, not slash, but like a straight slash S.
XS. Oh, no, that's terrible. No.
I know, it's not good. It's a problem. No. Anywho, I guess these things are getting stacked up in warehouses, and someone decided they were going to open one up and make a video of it.
Oh, dear. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's an Xbox Series X unboxing video, kind of unofficial. So if I get mine in the mail and it's been opened already, you'll know.
Did you get an order in?
I did not.
No, me neither. So pissed.
Yeah.
I really want one, Chris. Capicella. Anyway. Santa Claus. I know. My best friend and buddy. Actually, Paul should get it first. He needs to. I'm just an amateur. Really, he's a pro. Watch, Paul. They'll send one to Mary Jo Foley just to get on her nerves.
If they do, guys, I'm auctioning it to the highest bidder. Just saying.
Whatever Thorat gives you, I'll double it.
You know, there's no indignity too small.
There isn't.
Anyhow, Microsoft, over the past probably 3 months or so now, has been publishing this kind of regular series of articles about the Series XS. And some of the advantages, and a lot of it's like velocity architecture, it's a fast SSD, blah, 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 whatever. And so this past week, they published one about backward compatibility. And you kind of read through it, and you're like, yeah, you know, we know the story. It's one of the huge advantages of the Xbox platform. you bring all these titles forward, they get better. So if you're on an Xbox One today, and you're playing a backward compatible original generation Xbox game or an Xbox 360 game, it will be better in some way on the Xbox One, even if the developer did nothing to make that true. So it will load faster, it will look a little better, you know, whatever it is. And so they're promising that again for the Xbox Series XS. And it will vary by title, et cetera. It will include the Xbox One titles, of course. So everything Xbox One will go forward, and then the hundreds and hundreds of games from the other two consoles as well. But there's a little bit of a twist this time. They're introducing a feature called Auto HDR. So all Xbox original gen Xbox games, all Xbox 360 games, and even some of the early, like, first year or so Xbox One games are what we call SDR, like standard dynamic range. Since then, they've adopted HDR on Xbox One, but they're going to apply automatic HDR effects to SDR games without changing any code, without changing the art, and its developers don't have to do it. They don't have to. It just happens, and they're going to look better on the new consoles. That's cool. So we'll see what that looks like. Hopefully, it doesn't look ridiculous, but it should look good. And then not a huge deal, but, you know, every month at the beginning of the month and then in the middle of the month, Microsoft announces the Xbox Game Pass titles that are coming to the to console and PC. So they did that this week for the second half of October. And for the first time ever, one of the games is available on cloud streaming. So it's kind of weird because the way they write it in the post, which I don't think is I wouldn't have done it this way, but they say that it's available on Android. Right. So there's a game called Katana Zero that's available through Xbox Game Pass starting. Actually, it's not yet on the 15th, available on console, meaning Xbox One, and then eventually Series XS, PC, and also on Android, meaning through cloud streaming. So, OK. And then they announced this already, but Forza Motorsport 7, which is a Microsoft Studio game, is now available on Game Pass as well. So keeps on getting better.
Hmm. It would if I could just buy one of them.
Dissatisfied sigh.
Hmm.
Yeah, better.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Better for who?
Your quotes, I didn't hear it when you said
better.
Better.
Our back of the book is better. It's coming up next. Better, better, better. But first, a word from our sponsor, Twilio. I'll make this quick. Everybody knows Twilio, right? You know Twilio. What you don't... Look, if you're a developer, if you have customers and you don't know Twilio, listen carefully. Twilio is an awesome platform for your developers to build new ways to work with customers, to help customers, to respond to customers. Look, the world's changing fast. Customers demand support. And you can engage them on any channel they prefer, from text messages to emails to phone calls to video, with one single powerful platform. You guessed it, Twilio. And let me tell you, Twilio operates at scale. Twilio powers 795 plus billion interactions across the channels with five nines of uptime, 99.999% uptime. They have over 3 billion with a B phone numbers available across more than 100 countries. Customers love what Twilio has done for them. Shopify, for instance, uses Twilio. They use their Twilio Flex, that's their programmable contact center solution, to support their entire global contact center. More than 1 million customers. Shopify, you probably used it. Blue Apron. We love Blue Apron. They have a great newsletter. They power those newsletter emails with Twilio SendGrid. You've used Netflix, and I hope you have two-factor turned on. If you do, that's Twilio. We always are recommending Authy, which is Twilio's free two-factor authentication app, but they power the entire back end as well. Keep your online accounts secure. Ride-sharing, contactless delivery services like Lyft and Uber. You ever get a text message saying your food's on the way, your driver's almost there? That's Twilio. That's Twilio. They use Twilio. Product and operations teams use Twilio to create new ways to communicate with their users inside of applications, ranging from account notifications with text messaging to chatbots to securing online accounts with two-factor. Marketing teams use Twilio to get the word out, connecting with leads over text messaging and phone calls, send campaigns over email, build chatbots to answer questions. Customer service teams build global contact and support centers. And what do they start with? Twilio Flex, a fully programmable contact center application platform. And, you know, if you're thinking, oh, it's got to be complicated, it is not. I use Twilio. I love playing with Twilio. I haven't had an account for years. Twilio lets your developers control, and it's such power, the global communication network. Just saying that sounds good. Lets you control the global communication network with just a few lines of code. If you're devs, it's built by developers for developers. They made it simple and straightforward. If your devs know how to build web apps, they already know how to use Twilio. Build apps and text, call, chat, video conference. They don't need to be a specialized telecom engineer. Twilio does the hard part, the back end, and makes it easy for you to use and build incredible communications apps, because actually that's the whole point, is focusing on communicating with your customers. Strengthen those customer relationships. Unite communications across your entire business. It's Twilio, T-W-I-L-I-O. Go to Twilio.com to learn more today. That's Twilio.com. Can't wait to see what you do with it. Twilio, it's time to build. It's also time for the back of the book with Mr. P.T. Paul Thrott.
You got an exciting email the other day.
Yes.
I was told that I could now preload Call of Duty, Black Ops, Cold War on my console.
Xfinity told us that too.
Yeah.
As a customer,
I think they're trying to avoid having everyone do it on that day because it would bring down the entire network,
right,
you know?
Right.
But let's also accept the fact that on that day, you will have a day one update that no doubt will be 76 gigabytes anyway. Right. So what are you going to do? But here's why you want to do that. Starting tomorrow being October 15th here, as we record this, the Black Ops Cold War open beta will be available finally on Xbox, meaning Xbox One today. So if you pre-ordered the game digitally, you can preload the game. You'll be able to play it tomorrow through, I think it's Monday. If you didn't, you'll be able to play it for free regardless, starting on, I think, Saturday. Yeah, Saturday, October 17th through Monday, October 19th. So I think in that, I don't know if that means you have to download an actual Black Ops Cold War beta game that's separate from the whole game. Probably that's what that is. But we'll be able to go in and play that game over this weekend, and I cannot wait.
I would preload it if I had something like an Xbox One X or X, whatever, that Series X to preload it on.
Sure.
But I don't.
Well, you know, it's, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to preload it on the thing I have, and then intend to move
still have
the thing
to,
I'm going
to
have
still
as
have
soon
to
as I can.
Load it again on your new machine.
Yeah, there's no connect a serial cable between the two and just copy it right over. You know, so, yeah,
just move that USB drive from one to the other.
Well, you got to remember they have that smart download feature, whatever it's called, where it will download the version for the console you have. So this act, if you think about it, it's probably three or four different versions, you know, for all the Xbox One.
Yeah, I thought about doing it, and then I thought, well, I'm going to be putting on my Xbox One. I want to wait for my Series X.
Mm-hmm.
Or my PlayStation 5, whichever comes first.
Whichever lets me pre-order first.
Mm-hmm. I'm not picky.
Yeah. All right. Any of those would be good.
Any of them.
Speaking of that, knowing that I am getting an Xbox Series XS of some kind, of both kinds probably, I realized I had to upgrade my monitor. I've been gaming on a, it's a really big display, but it's kind of a middling display. It's like a 32-inch.
You need 4K, baby.
Yeah, so I had a 1440p display, HP. It has built-in speakers. It's actually, the speakers have surprisingly good stereo separation, which I will miss. I mean, I obviously can add speakers or whatever, but I started researching this, and I found, look, here's the deal. Xbox Series X, we'll call it for now, supports all this stuff that I'm not using today on my Xbox One X. So, for example, 4K 60 frames a second or higher, UHD, HDR 10, Dolby display. There's all this stuff, you know, that I'm just not doing. I've been using this kind of bland older display. So I started looking around. The one thing I, well, there's two things I didn't get. I found a 4K UHD HDR10 display from BenQ for about $300. So it's, you know, 3840 by 2160 or something. Okay, nice. I didn't get 120 hertz. It does variable refresh rate, but only up to 60. So I didn't get that, and it doesn't have the Dolby Vision or whatever that's called. It
doesn't have HDR. See, that's a bummer.
It does have HDR10.
Oh, it does? It does have HDR. Oh, yeah. Good. All right.
So it was supposed to arrive in the beginning of November, which I thought would be fine, you know, given the timing on everything. But it arrived today.
Hi.
So I thought, well, okay, great. 28. It's 28 inches, by the way.
Nice.
So, and it does have a built-in speakers, but those are lousy. But I, you know how like when you got an HD display and all of a sudden it was like you had new eyes or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what this is. So yeah. just playing the game that I already play.
Yeah.
It looks 100 times better, like 100 times.
Nice.
It's not even close. Like all these things in the game that I could see before, I now know are brightly lit or super colorful or whatever. It's amazing. And so I couldn't find one that had everything. Like if you did 4K UHD, HDR10, Dolby Vision, 128 hertz, it's like $800. Like I couldn't find one that was reasonably priced with all that stuff. But the one I got, I thought was a pretty good compromise. And my God, what is it? Like, it's like amazing.
Nice.
Yeah. So if you're going to be getting a next gen console, I guess my advice based on 15 minutes of experience is you're going to really want to make sure you have a display that matches the console. So 4K, HDR, if you can do it, you know, whatever. So if you have one, then you're fine. But I didn't. And now that I do, I wonder how I lasted so long without this. I might use this for my computer. It's beautiful.
It may not be as good for your computer. Well, it may be. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it has different modes, you know, so you can kind of switch around. But I'll play with it. But it, God, it's just like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's not even IPS.
I'm going to cry.
I've been denying myself for so long.
What were you playing on? A potato?
It's an HP 32-inch monitor.
Oh. All right. But you didn't have that. 1440. So you didn't have 2160 and you didn't have HDR.
Yeah, didn't have HDR.
Do you like the HDR? Can you tell the HDR? Can you
see? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I mean, in your face, obvious. Yeah. It's beautiful. And now I want to go look at other games. I mean,
exactly.
I thought Modern Warfare was really bland looking, but now I'm wondering if it looks better on this display. Right. Maybe it does.
Yeah. Well, I imagine
it'll be a terrible, one week before they release its replacement, we're like, actually, this game's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it after all. Not bad. Yeah. All right, Paul. All right. Good pick. Get a good preload COD and then get a good monitor.
Yep. And just wake up at midnight and go to town.
Play all night. It's what you did when you were 12. Mary Jo Foley has an enterprise pick of the week for us.
I do. So if you are a Microsoft 365 administrator, Microsoft announced some new tools at Ignite. This was kind of a low-key announcement at Ignite, but they announced that they were going to be adding things like the ability to have Office apps and add-in inventory, your security currency report to tell you how current and up-to-date your machines are from a security standpoint on the Office side, and servicing profiles, which let you have more granular controls over how your Office updates happen. So things like that'll look into things like metrics, how to optimize your network utilization and streamline processes. So they talked about these briefly at Ignite. And today, just as before we were recording the show, they announced that a couple of these are now in preview for anyone who wants to try them out. So the Office apps and add-in inventory is now in preview. The security currency report is now in preview. And I believe servicing profile also is in preview. And the only guidance here is they say to access these services, you have to ensure each of your Office apps are on version 2007. No, it must be 2007. Sorry, 2007 or later. I'm like, 2007, that doesn't make sense. So yeah. You need to be on pretty current versions of the Office apps for this to work. And right now, like I said, this is in preview only, but it sounds like some nice capabilities for the admins who need to keep control over how these many Office updates roll out to your entire network.
Okay.
Yes.
Now I have a premonition. You've got a code name of the week.
I do. Another announcement from Ignite that didn't get a lot of play, I didn't feel like. There was a Microsoft research project dating back to 2015 called Project Premonition. And when this first came out, it was Microsoft Research working with a bunch of universities and Bloomberg, I think. And it was all about tracking mosquitoes back in 2015. You know when Bill Gates used to go into rooms and release mosquitoes on crowds to try to bring up the idea that we need vaccines for mosquitoes? Well, cut to 2020, when we're now talking about a different kind of premonition that Microsoft outlined at Ignite. This same research project has been updated. And now they're calling it an early warning system. It combines robotic sensing platforms, AI, analytics, and cloud-scale metagenomics, whatever that is, to monitor disease-carrying animals like mosquitoes and also perhaps bats. So you can see where this is going. Now they've got the COVID angle here, right? And they're now pushing premonition as something that could help people predict epidemics, even like COVID.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah. So the reason this is in the news this week is Microsoft is talking about the Microsoft Premonition Cloud. So this is more for researchers, right? It's a platform on Azure for aggregating and analyzing the data that's collected by Premonition. They say it'll be available through an early access program in the coming weeks. So this is something that's actively being tested by researchers as a way to try to thwart viruses, not just mosquito-borne viruses, but even something like COVID-19.
I wonder what Bill Gates Codename has to do with this.
I know. I'm sure he has something to do with it,
yeah.
For sure. He was very interested in the original premonition because, his foundation was very big into malaria, combating malaria right. through vaccines and right. all that. So,
yeah. Very cool. Now, last week we let Paul hijack.
I've been drunk ever since.
The beer pick of the week, and he's been living on peanut butter whiskey. So we thought maybe we better not let Paul do another pick.
It was a fun experiment, but we're going to go in a different direction.
Paul's been drunk all week long.
This is a revenge pick in a way. Uh-oh. Because I'm like, he can make a pick with something as crazy as a peanut butter whiskey. So you know what? I'm going to one-up him here. I'm going to use my pick Uh-oh. For a pumpkin milkshake IPA.
Oh. You thought butter and raise it one pumpkin
milkshake. Pumpkin spice latte was bad. Wait till you try pumpkin milkshake.
So I'm not a big pumpkin beer person because I feel like they don't do a good job. Most brewers do not do a good job with it. It's overly spiced. You don't even taste the pumpkin. But if anybody's going to do a good one, Central Waters, that's based in Amherst, Wisconsin. They make some excellent beers, especially dark beers and high alcohol beers. And this one they've got called the Wendy Coffee Pumpkin Milkshake IPA actually sounds interesting. It's called Wendy because they had three employees at Central Waters named Ryan, and so they just named the last guy Wendy instead of Ryan. There's a guy at Ryan at Central Waters who loves pumpkin spice lattes, and they made a beer just for him.
God.
I was skeptical of this until I started reading all the reviews on Untappd, and I see it's also available here in New York, so I need to try it. But people love it. People are like, okay, I was very skeptical when I read about this beer, but it really is good. If you like pumpkin spice, this is your beer. They did a good job. So, yeah, Central Waters, Wendy Coffee Pumpkin Milkshake IPA. It's a lot of words, but if you like pumpkin spice lattes, you might like this beer.
With reviews like, I hate to admit that I like this. How could you go wrong?
Mary Jo knows as well as anyone, like there's all these pumpkin beers and most of them are pretty terrible, but every once in a while,
you
get a really good one. Yes.
Does pumpkin have a taste? I mean, I thought
it does,
but no, absent the spice.
You know what? Yeah. If you're not spitting out seeds, it's not real, folks. Okay.
No, pumpkin has like a very vegetal
Yeah, it's like a squash.
Kind of almost like squash.
It is a squash. Right?
Yeah, I think it's literally a squash.
Yeah. So if you like that kind of flavor and you also like spices, I think you would like to try this.
I don't like squash in my beer, though.
We're almost in
I've had squash beers.
Season,
they're really good.
Are they? Okay.
Some squash beers are good. Okay. Yeah, they are good. You have to be in the mood for it. But
I'd rather have a bacon most beer than a squash beer. Terrible.
Ooh, a bacon beer. Ooh.
Bacon and peanut butter is a good taste combination. Butter.
I want to get a bunch of those little sugar pumpkins. You cut off the top.
Yeah. Yeah.
You put a little spice and sugar and maybe peanut butter whiskey, and you bake
some vodka.
Then you throw away the pumpkin and you drink the whiskey.
Exactly. Yep. There you are.
And there you are.
There you are. There you stand.
Drinking whiskey out of a pumpkin.
You're not going anywhere.
You're not standing up.
Oh, I love a show that ends with strong liquor.
We need it as Windows users,
yeah,
as
God
we
knows,
always
God
say.
Knows.
We're going to careen to a close.
Yeah, we've passed out. That's it for Windows Weekly, but I thank you so much. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com is his website. The book, Windows 10 Field Guide, is out, updated with, soon to be with H2, but updated with 2004.
Yeah, moving on that.
Yep. But that's it. You get the update for free if you buy right now at leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her Red Ventures blog. No, her ZDNet blog. And together they are the dynamic duo of Windows reporting. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate your time today, and I hope you have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week, the both of you and all of you on Windows Weekly. We do the show on Wednesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it live or listen live. There's a stream, audio or video, at twit.tv/live. If you're watching and listening live, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. On-demand versions of the show are available at our website, twit.tv/ww. There's a Windows Weekly YouTube channel. And of course, the easiest and best thing to do is subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That way you'll have it the minute it's available. You don't have to think about it. It'll just be there on your device. If you are an asynchronous listener like that, you should probably check out our Twit community. We have a great forum celebrating its first anniversary, actually, this week. It's 1 year old. At www.twit.community. You're all invited. It's always, we have lots of good conversations in there. We are doing a best of for Windows Weekly. I don't think it's too late. Go to twit.tv/best of. If you remember a moment from the past 9 months, 10 months, that you think should be in the year ender, the best of edition, put whatever information you know in there at twit.tv/best of. And, each show we make a little bit of a, we take a little bit of the show, a little tiny tidbit out of the show. And we add it to our flash briefing. If you have an Amazon Echo device, your flash briefing, your morning news briefing, you can add Twit to it, and you'll get a little bit of Twit every morning as you start your day. So that's another nice thing you can do. All right. I'm done promoting. I'm ready to go home. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You too.
I'm Jason Howell, host of Tech News Weekly here on Twit.tv, along with my co-host, Micah Sargent. Each and every week, we talk to people who are making and breaking the tech news. It could be journalists writing amazing tech stories. It could be experts. It could be the sources of the stories themselves, developers, you name it. We bring them onto the show, and we talk to them about why their story is resonating with the world. You can watch and subscribe by going to twit.tv/TNW. Make sure you do that and you won't miss a single episode. We'll see you there.